women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning but didn't find his body. They came and told us they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus. He said to them, "How foolish you are and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself." And then a bit later, he actually appears to the 12, and Jesus then expands and restates that. And after they'd given Jesus something to eat, he said in verse 44, "This is what I told you while I was still with you. Everything must be fulfilled that is written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms." Then he opened their minds so they could understand the scriptures. "This is what it is written. The Messiah will suffer and rise from the dead on the third day, and repentance for the forgiveness of sins will be preached in his name to all nations, beginning at Jerusalem. You are witnesses of these things. I am going to send you what my Father has promised, but stay in the city until you have been clothed with power from on high." Now, I don't know about you, but when I've read those verses over time, I've sort of scratched my head a bit where it says, did not the Messiah have to suffer all these things? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, explained to them what was said in all the scriptures. And then again in verse 44, everything that must be fulfilled that is written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms. And I scratch my head and say, well, where's the story of Jesus in the Old Testament? Right? Where do I find that? You know, where's the chapter and verse that says, oh, it gives me all the details of everything? And I sort of scratch my head and I'm not super sure about it. And oftentimes I think that's an unhelpful way of thinking about it, because it's sort of like a proof texting version. We've got to go back and find these particular verses that say these particular things clearly. And if we do that, I think we can sometimes get a bit stuck. What I think is a much more helpful thing to do, and this is what we're going to do today, is we need to understand that the Old Testament and the New Testament together are a story that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And the people that lived in Israel in Jesus' day, they knew they were looking for someone. In the 100 years before and after Jesus, lots of people rose up claiming to be the Messiah. They were like, if you like, they were in the middle of the story. They were looking for the arrival of the hero. And lots of them would rise up, they'd gather some people, they'd launch some military offensive, and then they'd succeed for a while and then get defeated and get killed. And then someone else would rise up and claim to be the Messiah. And so in the context of that, that's where they were at their moment in history. And so to understand how Jesus connects with the Old Testament, we really need to understand the sweep of the story of the whole Bible. And I know many of you will have grown up and gone to Sunday school and, you know, had Sunday school lessons about different aspects of the Old Testament and things like that. And in the past, we've talked about the five C's of the Bible. You can see the pictures on the wall there, from creation to crisis to covenant to Christ to new creation. But earlier or late last year, I was reflecting on this a bit, and I was thinking, well, that's a bit like, with those five C's, we've only given you one hand. So I just want you to do something, an experiment for me now. I just want you to get one of your hands and I want you to put it behind your back. Can you do that for me? And with the other hand, I want you to clap. Oh, there's some shark hands over there from Baby Shark. I saw that with Jan. Yep, all right. Now I want you to bring your second hand back and from behind your back, and now I want you to clap. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And so what we're going to do is we're going to give you a simple tool that will help you remember the whole story of the Bible in your hands. If you're holding a Bible, you can hold the Bible in your hands, right? But if you don't even have a Bible, after this, you'll be able to hold the Bible in your hands. All right? So, if you've got the handout there, and grab a pen to enable you to do that, we're just going to go briefly through it. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, right? And so the first step, if you like, on the left-hand side, we are going left to right, And this particular handout, if we're in another culture, maybe you'd have to go right to left, but we're going left to right. So when you're filling out the thing, on the left-hand side of the thumb of the left hand, the first word is creation. Now, what you also need to do, like I did earlier, is you need to get your texter and you need to write a little C on your left thumb. All right? All the kids disappear, but we're going to be like kids and we want you to write a little C on your left thumb. Yep. And if you need another texter or another pen or something like that, we can certainly get those to you. But in the beginning, God created everything and it was good. And God, and humans were given given authority to rule over this world. And now some of you who are more clever than others of you are sort of racing ahead and trying to fill out the next one. So the first word is creation. And so then what do you reckon the next word might be? I'm going to take guess. Fall. Well done. All right. Now we're not talking about the season of the year. We're not talking about autumn and I'm pretending we're American, but it's fall. And that happened in Genesis chapter 3 where, Adam and Eve, they violated their covenant relationship with God. They compromised their kingdom rule and they were excluded from the close presence of God. And so that was a terrible thing. So that was the second stage in the story. And you might like to write a little F on your digit finger of your left hand. So you've got C and then F. All right, now we're going to take suggestions for what the third word might be. Covenant, excellent, well done. So that's on the middle finger of the left hand, on this covenant. So it's C-O-V-E-N-A-N-T. Or is it covenant? I can never remember where the A and the E go. Covenant. And so we see this started, we see this again in Genesis, starts in chapter 12, where God promises to Abram, leave your country and go to a country I will show you, and through you all the nations of the world will be blessed. And then God makes in various different times in Genesis, in chapter 15 and in chapter 17, God makes a covenant with Abraham and changes his name to Abraham. And so then starts the process of God fulfilling that covenant. And it took 25 years from when Abraham was 75 to when he was 100 for Isaac to be born. And then God challenged him to sacrifice Isaac. And then God miraculously provided for him not. And then Isaac had twins, Jacob and Esau, and they got on like a house on fire. Well, not in the positive sense, like they would have liked to have burned each other down, and so Jacob had to leave. And then Jacob had lots of kids, 12 sons to two wives plus some extras. And then Joseph got sold in slavery, went down to Egypt. And then at what they thought was for bad, God worked for good to save them during the famine, and Jacob and his whole entourage and family went down to Egypt. Then God raised up Moses to liberate them from slavery. And so we get to the next word. What do you reckon the next word is?
Exodus.
Fantastic. So write Exodus on the sheet, and on the fourth finger of your left hand, write a little E. And so God raised up Moses, and Moses didn't think he could do it, and he was not confident public speaker, but he sent Aaron along with him, and he went and confronted Moses, and there was the 10 plagues, and eventually Pharaoh, after changing his mind 10 times, let them go. And then they were at the Red Sea, and Pharaoh changed his mind again, and they thought they were going to die, but God parted the Red Sea, and they went into the wilderness. They met with God at Mount Sinai, and he gave them the 10 commandments and all the details about how to set up the tabernacle, which was God's mobile temple. And then they were going to go into the promised land, but then they freaked out because of the size of the giants, and so they had to wander around in the desert for 40 years, and their descendants ended up going to the promised land with Joshua. And you know the story of Jericho, and they're marching around the city and the walls fall down, and then the conquest of Canaan after that. And then there's a series of judges. When they get in trouble, God raises up a judge to rescue them, like Gideon or Samson, and they're people that you may have remembered from the dim distant past of your Sunday school lessons. And then finally they said, they looked at the nations around them and said, we want a king. So what do you reckon the next word might be?
Kingdom.
Kingdom. Excellent. And so that starts in 1 Samuel. So we've the first three words sort of refer to Genesis, right? And then we've got Exodus, and that goes with Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua. And then we get to God, the establishment of the kingdom. Not with Saul was the original king, but he didn't really work out. But David was the one that succeeded him, and he was the archetypal or the key king that Israel looked back into in their history. And what did David want to do, but God wouldn't let him? Who can remember that? So he wanted to build a temple, but God said, you've got too much blood on your hands, so you can't do it. So David did everything else. He assembled all the design, he assembled the resources and all those sort of things, but his son Solomon ended up building the temple. And so the next word on the thing we're up to, the little finger of your right hand now, is temple. Now, for those of you who are left-handed, have been struggling writing the little letters on your left hand, well, you now get to relax because you get to use your left hand to write on your right hand, and all of those that's a right hand now get stressed because how can I write with my left hand on my right hand? But you want to put a little T on your little pinky of your right hand. And so the story continues. Solomon was a great and wise king, and there was great growth and prosperity during his reign. And then he died, and there was Rehoboam, I think his son was, and he was less wise, and he he ignored the wise advisors and listened to his mates and imposed heavy taxes on everybody. And so the northern 10 tribes said, we're out of here, and they went off by themselves and formed the northern kingdom of Israel, and the kingdom that had been one under David and under Solomon split into two. And then they started doing some worship up in a different shrine up in the northern part of the kingdom, and there's a series of kings, and this story is recounted in 1 and 2 Kings and repeated in 1 and 2 Chronicles, but some kings were good and some kings were bad from a spiritual perspective. Some of the bad kings were good economically, some of the good kings were not necessarily so great economically, but from a God perspective, it was an up and down thing. And God had promised through Moses back in Deuteronomy that if you follow my commands and keep my laws, you'll be blessed, but if you don't, you'll be cursed, and you'll end up being exiled. And so that's the next word, exile. The northern kingdom went into exile first. I think it was about 720 BC. Yeah, so the exile is recounted at the end of 2 Kings and at the end of 2 Chronicles. And so then the northern kingdom of Israel goes into exile first, and then about 120 years later, the Judah and Benjamin, which are the remaining two tribes in the south, they get taken into exile about 100 years later. And so then you have them existing in exile. You have the story of Daniel, for example, happening. And they were exiled for about 70 years. It wasn't exactly that, but then they started coming back, some dribs and drabs. And so then you have the stories of Nehemiah Ezra about the comeback, and they rebuild the temple and they rebuild the walls. And then you've got some of the additional prophets then talking about stuff that where they've got distracted from rebuilding the temple, like Haggai and people like that. And although they were back in their land, and they came back into their land about, you know, the late 500 BC century, and then they came back a bit more after that, they were basically under foreign rule still, from the Ptolemies and the Seleucids. There was a brief period where the Maccabeans rose up in revolt and they kicked out people, and there was a brief period of independence, but they were soon overtaken again by the Romans. And although the Israelites were back in their land, they didn't see that the exile was over, because we're back in our land, but it was like we're prisoners in our own land. And so that's why they were looking for a Messiah. And so then Christ came. So we're on the middle finger of your right hand now. You need to write a little C on the middle finger of your right hand. So we've got creation, fall, covenant, Exodus,
kingdom, temple, exile, Christ. Two fingers left. Anyone want to guess what the pointer finger on your right hand should be, what the words for that should be on that one? Yes? No, not Christ again. But the church. And so we have this, you know, the life, death and resurrection of Jesus, and then we have the outpouring of the Spirit on Pentecost and the start of the church, and then the history of the church is recorded in the letters in the New Testament and also in the book of Acts. And then the final stage is, who wants to guess? New Caledonia is a heavenly place, yeah. there'll be the French pastry for everybody in heaven. So it's not New Caledonia, although that's maybe a example of it. It's new creation. So the final thing is new creation. You know, and at the end of the book of Revelation, God says, "Behold, I make everything new." And that this point is to that back in Isaiah and things like that as well. So it's not that's the only time it's talked about. It's talked back in about in Isaiah as well. And so here we've got in our hands and on our fingers the whole story of the Bible. So I want you to hold your hands in front of you. And from your thumb on your left finger, it's creation. Then wiggle the fingers as we go through the stages, right? Creation, fall, covenant, Exodus, kingdom, temple, exile, Christ, church, new creation. So here's the thing, right? Now you've got the Bible in your hands. So wherever you are, even if you don't have your phone app, you can just pull out your hands and think, I've got the whole story of the Bible in my hands. The whole story of what God is doing with humans in this universe in my hands. So when you do pull out your EBC Bible reading app, as I know everybody does religiously on every day, and you see that like today there's four Bible readings. One is from Genesis 12. In fact, God's promise to Abram, right? And so then you can pull out your hands, you know, okay, now where does that fit? That's in Genesis 12. Actually, that's about God's promise to Abraham. So that's covenant. That fits on my second finger on my left hand. Then you've got Psalm 121, which is, when you pull it up, it says it's a song of ascents. So this is a psalm that they used to sing when they went up to Jerusalem to the temple to celebrate feasts. And so, so now we know where that psalm was located. It was located after the creation, fall, covenant, Exodus, kingdom, temple. So it's after the temple, but it's before the exile, right? Or maybe it's when they've come back from the exile, but it was probably written before the exile. So now we know where that was written in the story of the Bible. And then we go, the next one is Romans chapter 4. Now, so where does Romans chapter 4 fit in? Which finger of your hands does it fit? The church, so it's the second finger of your right hand, right? Because it's Paul writing to the church in Rome. And then there's no prizes for guessing where the last reading, John chapter 3, fits. Because that's about Christ, right? And it's about him with Nicodemus. And God so loved the world, you know, he gave his only son so whoever believes in him will not die but have eternal life. All that. And so whenever we're now reading parts of the Bible or you're hearing sermons from different parts of the Bible, you'll just be able to look at your hands and think, okay, where in the story of God does this particular passage come from? And it will help us remember the whole story. And that helps us understand how Christ fulfills the story. And does anyone here like watching murder mysteries? On like particularly British ones, yeah. What's your favourite murder mystery for those of you who like watching them? Endeavour, Morse, yeah. Who else? I liked back in the day. I liked Bergerac before he became Midsummer. I'm never going to Midsummer. That place is a dodgy place to live. Yeah, the chances of you getting murdered in Midsummer are really high. So it looks idyllic, but it's actually a hell of a hole of a place to be. But, you know, that's the way it works, doesn't it? You know, you've got this dead body, and then when you get to the end of the murder mystery or whatever else it is, you find out who done it, and then all of these things that happened before now make sense. That clue that you didn't quite understand how it fitted the picture now becomes clear. And I was actually thinking about this last night, and this is like a reference for people that are probably our age, more my age and my vintage. Who remembers Mr. Squiggle? And Miss Jane, or Miss Rebecca. There's a whole series. Not Miss Pat, depending on what. So for those of you who don't know Mr. Squiggle, it was a show on the ABC TV that went for about 40 years, and it was a puppet called Mr. Squiggle who had a nose which was a pencil. And then he had a sidekick who was Miss Jane, and people from all over the country would send in bits of paper that had some random squiggles on it. And then Mr. Squiggle, using his nose, would turn it into a picture. But oftentimes it would be doing it upside down, and then you wouldn't be able to figure out what it was until you turned it around the right way up, and all of a sudden, all of the squiggles made sense. You see? And that is largely how we need to understand the way Jesus fulfilled Moses, the law, and the Psalms. That there were all these things that happened back then, and then when Jesus came along, they all of a sudden make sense. They all of a sudden had greater significance. A few years ago, Chris and I were watching TV, as we sometimes do, and it must have been during the summertime, because it was during cricket or whatever, and there came on the TV screen a incident from a cricket match back in 1980. And it was a day-night match at the SCG, and it was famous because Rod Marsh was batting, and he took strike and he hit the ball, and then the bat broke, and the end of the bat cartwheeled down the pitch towards the umpire and almost decapitated the umpire. Australia ended up losing that game, but when we saw that on the TV, Chris and I both at the same time said, I was at that match. And so we then realised that was the first time in our lives that Chris and I were basically in the same place. We didn't meet each other at that point, but we were like 10 or 11 years old, right? And I had been on a family holiday somewhere, and we'd gone to Sydney, and we were in the Barongal stand watching the cricket. And Chris was down in Sydney for some reason, and she was in the Barongal stand watching the cricket. I think we figured out that we were on different levels, but that match all of a sudden took on new significance for us in the light of what happened later, right? That's meaningful for us now looking back. And that's, in fact, how much of it works. When you look back and you think about the story. Yes, Jesus makes sense of the story. Jesus is the culmination of the story. He is the Messiah who brings them out of exile, but not by defeating the Romans, casting them out, but by expanding the people of God to include the Romans. And he does it not just by being having a bigger army or a stronger sword or whatever else, but by conquering death. And so therefore dealing with all those who would seek to conquer other people, because he's got resurrection power which no one else has. And we talk about there being three big themes in the Bible that we look at, right? And they are covenant, kingdom, and temple. And when we seeing that Jesus fulfills the Old Testament because he's fulfilling the story, we will see that there are strong links to these three themes. Jesus, on the night he was betrayed, he took bread and said, "This is a covenant in my blood." And it picks up, and the writer of the Hebrews picks it up, that actually this is connecting with the promise from Jeremiah that God would make a new covenant. You see. And then when Jesus is crucified, what's the sign above his head? King of the Jews. And so he understood that he was the King of the Jews, right? He was called the Son of David. God had promised that to David centuries before that one of your descendants will sit on the throne forever. And so Christians understood that when they look back now, Jesus is the one who sits and rules forever. He's the one who is the one who fulfills the vision that Daniel had in Daniel 7 of the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven and taking a place of authority in heaven. From the vantage point of being post-resurrection, Jesus explains all of this, and the disciples begin to grasp and understand all of this. And when you do that, you then and the more you are familiar with the Old Testament, and when you're reading the New Testament, you then can pick up things that begin to make a lot more sense how Jesus is fulfilling stuff. Even, for example, in the Song of Zechariah, in beginning of Luke chapter 1, it talks about this. He has raised up a horn of salvation, and then in verse 73 it says, "The oath he swore to our father Abraham to rescue us from the hand of our enemies." And that you might just read over that, but actually there was this thing where God promised Abraham that they would rule over their enemies, and it's found in Genesis chapter 22. And it comes precisely, when God has challenged Abraham to sacrifice Isaac on the mountain which became the place where Jerusalem was built, where Jesus was actually sacrificed. And you remember that Abraham took his son Isaac and wood and bound him up and put him on the wood and was about to light the wood. And then God said, "Don't do it." And then there was a ram caught in the bush. And they said that God would provide. And so Abraham, and this is Genesis chapter 22, verse 14, said this. "So Abraham called that place, 'The Lord will provide.'" And now looking back, we see that the death and resurrection of Jesus on that same mountain is "The Lord will provide." "The angel of the Lord called to Abram from heaven a second time and said, 'I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sand on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies, and through your offspring all nations on earth will be blessed.'" And so the early church understood that through Jesus and the spread of the good news out into the Gentile world, that this was God fulfilling that promise, that through Abraham and his offspring, all the nations of the world will be blessed. You see, Jesus is fulfilling the theme of covenant in the Old Testament. As the Messiah, he's fulfilling the theme of kingdom from the Old Testament all the way through. And when Jesus was on trial, one of the accusations they brought against him was, he said that if you destroy this temple, I will raise it in 3 days. And in the beginning of John's Gospel, it makes clear that looking back, they understood that Jesus was referring to his body. That Jesus was now the place where you went for the connection with God. See, the temples were places that connected heaven to earth, right? And Jesus is the one who connects heaven to earth. He's the one who reveals what God is really like. And if you trust and follow Jesus, you end up being like in heaven. And then you read through all of John's Gospel, and it's amazing the number of events that actually happen at feasts in the temple. Not just Passover at the end, but Jesus turns up at the Feast of Tabernacles and the Feast of Passover and the Feast of Dedication. And it's like he's saying, what you do through these festivals actually now is fulfillment or completion in me. And then we all know that when Jesus died on the cross, the curtain that kept the Holy of Holies separate from everybody else was torn in two. And free access to God's presence was now available to everyone. You see, Jesus completes the story, completes the longing of the Old Testament from a narrative sense. And then when you, in the light of that information, when you look back, lots of details fall into place. Like I mentioned, I think emails and on the Facebook group that I was reading John chapter 12 as part of our giving up, ignoring God for Lent. And there's two references there to passages in Isaiah, Isaiah 6 and Isaiah 53. And John clearly says that when Isaiah was experiencing and recording those things, he was encountering Christ.
So before that, you'll just read these passages and they were amazing or maybe a bit confusing. But in the light of what happened with Jesus, looking back, actually, no, this was God at work revealing himself in a much more significant and important way than me finding out that I was at the same cricket match as Chris all those years ago. And so Christians have read the Old Testament story in the light of how Jesus fulfills it and completes it in terms of covenant, kingdom and temple. In the second passage I read at the end of Luke 24, it says, through Moses, the prophets and the Psalms. And that's interesting because Christians have, since the time of Jesus, read the Psalms and understood that they actually point to the Messiah. We won't do it now, but I encourage you to go and read Peter's sermon on the day of Pentecost in Luke chapter 2. In Acts chapter 2. And he's explaining who Jesus is, and he refers to two different Psalms. He refers to Psalm 16 and to Psalm 110. And they are Psalms that certainly Psalm 110 is quoted regularly in the New Testament as explaining who Jesus is, where it says, the Lord said to my Lord, and it's basically a Psalm of David, and so David is saying that one of his descendants is Lord, and so he must be bigger than and more important than David, but how could that be? Well, it's because he's the Son of God as well as the Son of David. And Psalm 16 talks about, that he will not let his Holy One see decay. And they saw that as God saying, yes, God's Holy One, it was pointing to, it was prefiguring, it was giving an indication of that there would be a resurrection. And so in the light of Jesus' death and resurrection, Jesus explains to his disciples how he fulfills and completes, if you like, the story of the Old Testament, the longings of the people of God. We can see it in the big picture of how the story of the Bible works. We can see it through the themes, the main big themes of the Bible, of covenant, kingdom and temple. And that then enables people to look back and see passages from the Old Testament in new light. They make sense now in fresh ways because of what's happened, because of who done it. And so it's not that we need to look for, you know, one particular verse here and one particular verse there, but with these eyes, with the story in our hands, and as we read the Old Testament and become more familiar with it, with the eye keeping in mind these three themes, you will find that you make linkages between the Old Testament and the New Testament in ways that you haven't done before. And you'll say, yeah, God is fulfilling his what started in the Old Testament is completing in the New Testament. And it's all integrated together. All right. Now, I want you to turn to a person next to you, and I want you to see if you can, without looking at your sheet, I want you to see if you can go through and remember the 10 points on your fingers, all right? And that's all right, and when you've had a go, you can swap around and the other person can have a go back at you, so everybody gets a go. So if you're a lone person by yourself, just move a bit and find someone and see if you can run through the 10 points. All righty. So we're going to run through it all together now, okay? So I'm going to say, and you have a go. You can check your cheat sheet if you want to, but just hold out your hands in front of you. We're going to go through the whole Bible on our fingers. If we start with, say it out loud with me, creation, fall, covenant, Exodus, kingdom, temple, exile, Christ, church, new creation. Well done. Now, one final thing I want you to do. What I want you to do is I want you to take your hands. I want you to make sure that the texture is dried. And now I want you to put your head in your hands. You know, sometimes things happen in life and it's really tough and all you want to do is put your head in your hands. All right? Well, now when you do that the next time, metaphorically or literally, and you can stop it doing it now, putting your head in your hands, I want you to remember that you live
in God's big story. Right? That whatever good thing or bad thing is going on in your life, when you put your head in your hands, I'm part of God's big story that starts with creation, goes through exile and Christ, and is heading towards new creation. However terrible my current situation is, it's in a bigger context, which is actually glorious. So not only is it a tool for Bible study, it's a tool for helping you place your life and reminding yourself of the big story of God that you and I are all part of. The Bible in our hands, our head in our hands. Part of God's big story. And so we're going to finish by singing King of Kings, which is a song that tells part of the story of God. It starts with Jesus, but it refers to the fact that in fulfillment of the prophets, Jesus came. And so we're going to sing part of the story. And hopefully this simple tool will help you remember the whole story. And so your life and my life can be placed within that story and the sense it makes of our lives and the hope it brings to our lives. Let's stand together and sing.